Hi, everybody. My name is Doug, and I am an alcoholic. This is great. Chris and I were just talking about what a great time we're having here, and we hope that you all are enjoying it. I'm glad the weather is holding up. Being from Florida, this is absolutely extreme cold for me. But the beauty and the excitement of your cleanest country in the world, I'm going to have to W that.
It's a great country.
Boy, it's great. We're having a real good time. We just finished up with 6 and 7. We just said the 7-step prayer. Now, on the character defects that I have here, if you want to have fun, please give this to your loved one and have them fill it out. They look at you totally different than you look at yourself. All right? I did that. I was very offended. It was very humbling. What it states here is that it says, after the amen in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 76, we just read the prayer. Now, I get everybody to their knees because that's the way they used to do it. They used to get to their knees. It was a very Catholic Christian organization, although they didn't want it to be that way. That's where they learned and that's what they knew. And you got to your knees and you said the 7-step prayer because they used to say humbly upon our knees. And they made a change in the big book. Now, the next word. See, I was talking about time frames here, how everyone says there's no time frames. Take your time. 1 step a year or 1 step a month.
Easy does it.
Easy does it.
Easy does nothing, by the way.
Yeah, easy does nothing. I'm telling you. Killing more people than the Black Plague did when it almost wiped out Europe. And it's wiping out America now. It's terrible. So it says here, the next word is now. The next word's now. I got to highlight it. I got quotations. I got a box around it. I'm like arrows next to it. Now we need more action, which now I guess means now. Now we need more action. Without which that we find faith without works is dead. Okay? Ann used to say that after she would read to, she was big into the book of James. Actually, Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the earlier names was called the James Gang. Because he used to read from the book of James. I don't know if you all knew that. And then it was the first 100 men. And a nice lady from New York ran in and said, "Wait a second, I'm here," right before it went to printing. And some drunk came in and was like, "Oh, why don't you just call it Alcoholics Anonymous?" And that's how we got our name, from a drunk. I mean, it couldn't have been
right
better.
Out of Greystone Mental Hospital.
Yeah, Greystone Mental Hospital is a very popular mental hospital. I mean, you don't get much more lower than Greystone. So that's how we got our name, from the bottom of the barrel.
I've done commitments in there, carrying the message in there. It's spooky. There'll be people that walk in like da-da-da-da-da. They'll look and they'll take off. And then a minute later, they'll walk in, da-da-da-da. They'll look around. They'll take off. And this will go on the whole meeting. It's like disconcerting. I mean, they'll walk in like nothing and then take off like 40 or 50 times while you're trying to share.
So it says, now we need more action. Without which we find faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of persons we have harmed and to whom we are making, who are willing to make amends. We did that, remember, with the harms others list that I showed you from the workshop here, from the paperwork. It's the harms other inventory, which is right over here. Okay? So right here, it says, we have a list of persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. I love getting these new sponsors. "Hey, will you sponsor me?" I said, "I'll tell you what. I don't really sponsor people. I bring people through the mechanics of the steps, and then I would like you to find a sharing partner, a life sharing partner, so that I can do my work. And my work, I believe, is to bring the original message of the big book to the masses. That's what my belief is, and I think I do it very well, and that's what I do." And I said, "But I'll hear your 4-step. "Well, I burn it." "What do you mean you burnt it?" "Well, my sponsor said we went on the beach," because I live on an island. "We went to the beach and we burnt it and we let it go up to the sky." And I'm like, "Oh, God. Well, then you're going to have to rewrite it again." "Well, why? We gave it to God." "Good. Rewrite it. Let's look what God had to say in the last 3 months." and see what your inventory looks like. So it says here, we have a list of persons we had harmed and to whom we were willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subject ourselves to this drastic self-appraisal. Time frame. Next word, now, which is now. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. And this is what I do. This is where I had my spiritual awakening. And I'm going to tell you that phenomenal story tonight. At 37,000 feet on an airplane, I won't even mention the airline. Oh, I could. I didn't fly from United Airlines. Watch the stock plummet over in Denmark. United Airlines, and it was due to this step. This step changed my life. Now, the main reason why I got these cards, folks, because I am a recovering scumbag, and I was bad. I was a bad person. So I would knock on these doors because being an airline pilot, I had the ability of making direct amends to everybody. Now, I didn't find that to be very fair. And I made that known. I was like, why can Chris not write a letter? And because you can get on an airplane for free since you're a pilot, go make amends in Minnesota. So I'd be in Minnesota and knock on this girl's door and she'd be like, what do you want? You know, like, and I got so nervous that I started making out these cards. And I'd be like, I am here, I have done you harm, and I owe you an amend. And they'd be like, yeah, you know, looking out the door, get in here, you're embarrassing me. I'd be standing there in the doorway. Is there anything that I could do to make this wrong? Yeah, why don't you speak from your heart? Okay, I did think. So what I've done is I found that making out these cards, which is right out of the big book, actually. It has the questions that you need to ask. It has exactly what you need to do. And by doing this, I didn't freak out as much. And it really, really helped me out. The eighth and ninth step, as Chris will share with you a little bit, then I'll come back and bring you through the mechanics, is absolutely my whole life changed. My whole life changed. My story, and this is where I break down. It's still 13 years later because of the overwhelming life that I have today, of the overwhelming power inside that I have from my God. This gave me my God. But when you hear my story, you're going to be like, oh my God, talk to going to any lengths, literally any lengths. And when I was off that airplane, I was living in Washington at the time, and I'd fly back, I'd be like, I am not going anywhere again, and F this, and I'm not going. And they'd be like, all right. And after the meeting, they'd be like, all right, so where are you going next week? Oh, I'm going to California to make amends. You know what I mean? I just kept going. I kept doing it. And when I did the last one is when I popped. It all came. I needed and wanted God, and it was an overwhelming God consciousness, and it is the funniest story you will ever hear at 37,000 feet. Come tonight, 8 o'clock.
There you go.
You know why we're doing this? Because there's a national hockey team on.
Yeah.
And oh, we're not going to tape that story, by the way, either. So you're not going to be able to get the tape. You have to come here.
I'll give a little bit of it away. One of his favorite sayings as a pilot was, 8 hours, bottle the throttle. So, like, if you have a little trepidation flying, you may want to go behind the black curtain there.
They used to have a law in America. It was called the Federal Aviation Regulations, and it was 8 hours from drink to flying. 8 hours from drink to flying. Well, you got to understand, we'd get 4 days off in a row. So I'm drunk for 4 days. Right? You wake up. So I'm drunk for 4 days. So I'd have to stop only 8 hours. I mean, you know, you drive into the airport like this.
He'd still be lizard-eyed while he was up there.
I'd be like, just please get me on the airplane. I'll be safe. Just get me on the airplane. Yeah.
Thank God for autopilot, right?
Oh, thank God for, yeah, captains, flight engineers, all of them. They were great. They saved my life. They saved your life, not my life. I had nothing to do with it.
What does that red flashing light mean?
It woke me up. I'd be like, oh, my God, what?
Anyway, Okay, steps 8 and steps 9. All right, we've trashed the world. I mean, we're like tornadoes. It talks about us like being tornadoes that blow through the lives of the people around us, you know? And we get sober and we think everything's fine. You know, all I need to do is not drink today. And that's all I need to do for my amends is not drink today. Well, the big book takes exception to that and tells us that we need to set right the wrongs that we've caused. I'll read a little bit from the book here. Page 76. We have a list of persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. Probably there are still some misgivings as we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt. We may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. This was being written back when they were really in the Oxford group, just separating from the Oxford group. And they would talk about finding God. You know, I'm doing this because I found God and I found Jesus. And Bill is saying, you know, sometimes you may not want to approach somebody that way. They will brand you as a fanatic or a bore, which I usually did when people knocked on my doors saying that, you know. Again, there's a whole bunch. I'm not going to go over every single instruction here. But it does say that we need to be willing to face these people. We need to be willing to face these institutions. There's a powerful reason for being able to make amends. Let's say I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm still a real jerk and I'm still running my game and everything, but I am kind of trying to get sober. And Doug over here, you know, I'm kind of hurting for money because we don't always come in here at the top of our game. We usually don't say, you know, I hit the lottery and, you know, everything's great. I think I'll go to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's usually the exact opposite, really. It's usually when we're at our lowest. And I come into AA and Doug over here is looking good and he's acting real friendly to me. So, Doug, how about $100? I'm short on my rent. And Doug is a good guy, so he gives me $100, you know, I put it in my pocket. I'm going to pay you back on Thursday. I just got a job. I'm going to pay you back on Thursday. Well, Thursday comes, and it would be inconvenient for me to pay him back. I've got some pressing issues that I could use that money for. So I don't pay him back, and I spend it on something else. Now, Doug's a nice guy. He's leaving me alone. But one week goes by, another week goes by, another week goes by. Now I start to resent the fact that Doug is in the meetings. You know, I got to look at him all the time, like owing him money. So after a while, I leave that meeting so I don't have to see him. And, you know, and I get a resentment against him. And I've got this issue. Now, alcoholics don't just have one of these things in their pocket when they come into AA. They have about 150. So you've got like 150 problems that have gone undealt with in your life, and you're dodging and weaving. You can't go down the road without, oh, here comes so-and-so and ducking up an alley or something. You know, there's just too much unfinished business that we leave out there in the wake of our disaster. You know, the family is still waiting for the shoe to drop. You know, they're waiting for us to drink one more time. So it's very, very important to become willing to set right these wrongs. I had this guy that I was working with who was a kleptomaniac. Basically, whenever he was in a 7-Eleven or a store, he would pocket something. He really thought that if it was in front of him and nobody was looking, that you're supposed to steal it, you know? So it got down to the ninth step, and he was really willing to recover from alcoholism. And I said, okay, you're going to go back to every single 7-Eleven that you can remember stealing from, and you're going to pay him back. He goes, what? I go, yeah, because he's still stealing into sobriety. He's still going, and he's still stealing gum or cigarettes. And he's sober 2 or 3 years when he finally starts to work with me. So he goes back out, and because he has willingness, and he goes back out and he pays back the money. He goes to these places and says, you know, I've been stealing here for like 3 or 4 years, or yeah, I think I owe you about $150, you know, and he started paying all these places back. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think he still shoplifts after going and paying everybody back? No. So it goes to show that when we become willing to make amends for the harms that we've caused through our character defects, we can overcome these character defects. He's not a shoplifter anymore. You know, when we go back out and we make amends to the women that we've harmed in our past, we start to learn how not to harm women. And, you know, so it's very, very important to get to the point where you're willing to start going out and make amends. Now, you know, Doug's got some unbelievably good amends stories. Any of us that have worked a really strong program have amends stories. I mean, I've been thrown out of offices. I was probably the first person in my area that went back to ex-employers. I mean, there was a lot of people who would apologize to the family. And then they would share in a ninth step meeting that they had done the ninth step. Because I was exposed to these tapes and some people that were real heavyweights, I actually went back to ex-bosses. And I actually took road trips to go make amends. And I actually made amends to those I had harmed. I went and paid money back from years ago, people that didn't even know I owed them money. And I just started, I had a list like Doug, and how I did them was on index cards. I did them on 5x7 cards, and I would write on the front who it was, the exact nature of the harm that I caused, where they were, what their phone number was, and you know, on the back I basically put what I thought would be an appropriate approach and an appropriate amends, and then the three questions. I go by three questions, and here are the three questions. Let's say you're making amends to somebody who you've screwed up a relationship with. All right. I go to them and I say, here are the harms I'm clear on. Here's how I believe I've hurt you, blah, 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 blah. And I admit it. And then I ask this question. Did I leave anything out? I mean, is there anything I'm unclear on as far as how I've hurt you? And then shut up, because they're going to tell you most of the time, unless it's a superficial amends. Certainly, if it's an amends with a woman that I've harmed, I'm going to be told, you know, what I left out, because I'm not perfect and I'm going to leave things out. The second question is, you want to talk about this a little bit and tell me how it made you feel, me harming you like that, how it made you feel, how it affected you, and shut up. And then I'm going to get another earful. When I did this with my ex-wife, it was about an hour each. You know, she filled me in quite thoroughly. Thank you. And then the third question. Here's the third question. The third question is so important. What do I need to do to make this right? And shut up and listen, or write down, or whatever. Now, sometimes it's anatomically impossible to do what they say to set things right.
F yourself.
Yeah. But most of the time, it's going to be, yeah, you can do this or you can do that. And you know what? If it's appropriate and if it's possible for me to do that, I will do that. And then I will consider the amends complete. Now, I do a lot of lecturing at rehabilitation facilities and stuff. And I was actually giving a talk at the Rutgers School of Alcohol Studies where they were a bunch of counselors that were about to become alcoholism counselors. They were about to go out into the world and counsel you about your alcoholism. And I was sharing a little bit of my experience with the steps. And this guy grabbed me afterward, and he came up to me. And now understand that this is somebody who's going to be an alcohol counselor in about 2 minutes. And he grabs me and he goes, you were talking about making amends. Well, don't you have to deal with your shame? And listen, I don't mean to make light of shame. Shame is an actual thing that, you know, you can get treated for. But most alcoholics have shame because they have unresolved amends. Now, I go, no, I don't have to deal with my shame. And he goes, what do you mean? I go, I don't have any shame. And he goes, how's that possible, being an alcoholic? I go, well, let me ask you a question. I go, have you ever made a list of all those that you had harmed? And he goes, no. And I go, well, then you must not have made direct amends to all those you had harmed to the best of your ability, except when to do so would injure them or others. And he goes, no. I go, then how the hell can you tell me you can't get rid of shame? How, you're giving me an opinion on an experience you've never had. This is the experience that got rid of my shame, my guilt, and my remorse. So I no longer suffer from those things. And he walked away, still totally confused and not believing me, ready to counsel all of us. Okay, which is kind of a scary thing, if you think about it. Anyway, we certainly don't judge from the podium, do we? Do we, Doug? It's not something, you know, we'll report the facts, but we will not judge. Anyway, these amends are extraordinarily important. You know, I get to travel. I'm down in Doug's wonderful state of Florida this one time, and I'm on vacation with my wife. And I go to this meeting in Key Largo, Florida. Now, the last time I had been in Key Largo, Florida was 1978, New Year's Eve. And what happened was I got really drunk, and the last thing I remember was jumping up on stage trying to grope the hula dancer. Lulu. Okay? Yeah, Lulu, the hula dancer. I remember trying to grope her, and that's the last thing I remember. I think they knocked me unconscious because I woke up the next day in the dumpster. It was like 8 in the morning and the seagulls are croaking and I've got crabs stuck in my hair. And I literally climb out of a restaurant dumpster. They can get funky, can't they? He owns a restaurant. You know. Now I'd forgotten this. And I'm sitting in this AA meeting and I go, wow, I've got a funny story I can tell. So this is like 1999 or, no, wait, yeah, it was like 2000 or something. So I raised my hand and I go, hi, I'm Chris. I'm an alcoholic. I want to tell you all a story. The last time I was in Key Largo, Florida, it was New Year's, 19, and I jumped up on stage and tried to molest the hula dancer. Now the next guy, everybody laughs. The next guy that cheers goes, I know who that is. That's Lulu, the hula dancer. She's still dancing at that same bar. I go, no! What are the chances of that? What is the half-life of a hula dancer? How? I have to pick the one that's made a lifelong career of it in the same bar. Off we go to make amends to Lulu, you know? Just my luck. I mean, you have to stay open. You have to stay open to the spiritual process, though. You have to be willing to do these things. It may be inconvenient for you to go make an amends somewhere. You know what? Tough. You got to do it anyway. You got to do it anyway because we the spiritual life is not a theory. We must live it every day in our lives to be granted the safety and protection being able to stay separated from alcohol. And I believe God grants that safety and protection based on our willingness and our participation in the recovery process.
It says here, remember, it was agreed that at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. Now, I get all my pilot licenses back. Okay, I'm working on my night step. All my pilot licenses come back. And probably, I think it was about a year. The FAA let me start flying, but the airline I was flying for called me up, and they offered me a captain spot in Washington, D.C. And so that's a huge honor, and considering I hadn't flown in a year, I was in alcohol rehab, and then they offered me a captain slot. So great, great union stuff we have back in America. And so I move up to Washington, and I get another sponsor, a big book thumper. Again, I keep finding these people all over the place. And we start going through the ninth step. Well, as I'm on the A step, we're writing out our A step cards. Now, I know you all aren't going to believe this, but I used to be a thief and a liar. Now, I know it's coming to shock to everybody here, but what happened was I would steal from my neighbors. I'd break into their houses. I'd break into your houses. I'd steal from anybody. And so we're writing all this stuff down, and the guy says to me, my sponsor, says to me, well, He goes, all right, good. When are you going to go to New Jersey and do these amends? I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm not doing those amends. You crazy? I'll write him a letter. I'll give him a Catholic card with cash. He goes, no. He goes, I'll tell you what we'll do. Let's go to the big book. I know where he was going, too, with this one. So he went to page 80, and he said this. Top of the page, 80. Before taking drastic action, and he goes, I think knocking on your neighbor's doors, giving him cash, telling him you used to be a little thief to buy drugs and alcohol is kind of drastic. I can understand your fear, but let's see what it says here. It says, before taking drastic action, which might implicate other people, and then I thought to myself, aha, my family still lives in that neighborhood. So I look at him, I'm like, there you go, pal. I was ready to go do this. I was going up there. I was ready to go. But my family still lives in the neighborhood, and I can't tarnish their name. He goes, no. Okay, I understand that, but let's continue on. I thought I had him. So it says, drastic action, we might implicate other people. We secure their consent. He says, so before you say, aha, cowboy, why don't you fly up there and ask him? I said, okay. And so then the next thing it says is, if we have, number one, obtained their permission, number two, consulted with another, and he says, that be me, and I say, go, and ask God for help, so I want you to pray and meditate about this. And the drastic step is indicated, we must not shrink. So, this is what I did. And I'll tell you the story later this evening, but I would put on a suit and tie to make amends. Now, I still haven't figured that out 13 years later, but I thought it would ease the blow. So I put on the suit and tie, and I go up to see my family, and my two sisters and my mother are there. And I said, listen, I said, I used to be a thief in the neighborhood and steal from the neighbors. My mother, oh, Dave, here I come. I'm coming up. And you know, and I'm like, oh, my, I can't believe I'm doing this step. I can't believe I'm still doing this. And I said, Mom, calm down. Let me finish the story. You know, and she went on, rant and raved, and she said, well, how much did you steal? What did you steal? And she wanted to get the particulars. I don't advise that you say that because it was a lot of money. And so I said to her, well, listen, I'm up here because of my sponsor. And he says, you know, if I do this, I may stay sober forever.
Supposedly.
Supposedly. Supposedly I'll stay sober forever. So my sisters look at each other, my mother, and they're like the Three Stooges. Oh, yeah, then go ahead. Yeah, we're cool. And I look at him like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? I didn't have the cash. I had nothing. So I went to the store, and I bought Catholic cards and one Jewish card because I stole from the Bronsteins. And so I pack it full of cash, and I start, hi, Mrs. Sullivan. And they're like, oh, little Dougie. They call me Little Dougie, I guess you could imagine. Oh, Little Dougie, you know, airline pilot, makes good. Oh, it's so good to see you. Oh, my God, I walk in there, and, you know, her husband had just died, and oh, my God, it was just terrible. And I'd say, Mrs. Sullivan, I don't know if you know this. I've been sober for quite some time now, and it really wasn't quite some time. I said, I used to break into your house and steal money. What? Oh, and everyone put their hand over their heart like they're going to have a heart attack. Oh, all right, and I'm thinking to myself, what am I doing? Maybe these AA people don't have it right. Maybe they're wrong on this one. And she'd go through all this ranting and raving, and I'm like, here's your card. And then she'd open up and see all this cash. You stole this much from me? Do you understand how we used to struggle for money? Oh. Then I'd reach in my pocket. Are there any more harms I've caused you? Almost caused me a heart attack. Do you need to tell me how this hurts you? Are you kidding? Is there anything I can do right now? Get out! So as I'm leaving the door, she says, wait. She says, wait, listen, I can't believe you're doing this. I'm very impressed that you're doing this. Maybe I didn't act correctly. But I'm very disappointed in you. I appreciate what you're trying to do. She says, do you want me to tell my children? Because I used to hang out with their sons. I said, Mrs. Sullivan, you need to do what you need to do. I got another five houses that I got to hit. I got to go. She's like, five? I'm like, yeah, those are the ones I remember. That's not including the grocery stores and the bop, 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 bop. When I was done with that day, it was the most amazing, nasty day of my life. And I got back to Washington. I'm never doing this again. And at the end of the meeting, where are you going? Minnesota. You know. So what it says here is, remember that we are going to any lengths to get a spiritual awakening. It all says, at the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in all. Our real purpose, this is the real purpose of the ninth step. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves in maximum service to God and to help others. And so it says this, it tells you how to work with hate if you hate somebody, what to do if you dislike somebody. It tells you what to do if you owe people money. It says, if we are calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the results. And 9 times out of 10, those are great odds. And that was pretty much my 9 times out of 10. There was one person who just said, "You get out." And 9 times out of 10, the unexpected happens. Okay? It also tells you what to do if you have a criminal offense. I will tell you how I surrendered myself to a whole state. I blew up a state. It was just New Jersey. I owed them all in amends, and I surrendered myself. Wait till you hear that story tonight, okay? That was the one. That was the last one. If you look at my 9-step cards here, you will see in the top, your left-hand corner here, there's a number and a plus or minus, okay? Minus means there's no way I am doing that amends. The number is when you're going to do it. Number one's normally the mother, you know? Oh, just stay sober, you know? Number two is normally the sisters, and then it goes down to, like, the state of New Jersey, which is, like, number 32 minus minus. I mean, there's no way I'm doing that one, palsy. And I did. I did do it. So this keeps you really organized. What to do if you have a criminal offense? I will tell you that tonight. And it says, we may lose our position or reputation, face jail, but we are willing, we have to be, we must not shrink to anything. And I did not. It also tells you what to do if you had an affair, mixed up with a woman in a fashion. It tells you how to handle that. The females being mixed up, the males being fixed up, whatever it may be. But it does tell you how to handle that. Whatever the situation is, we usually have to do something about it. If you ask me questions on the 9th step, I will tell you how to handle that situation. I've been in almost every one of them, and it hasn't been pretty, but I'm telling you now, it changed my life. I've never drinking again, and I don't believe that I will ever drink again. I truly believe that. I believe I have permanent sobriety. Now, there's a condition, as so long as I keep spiritually fit and work the circle in the triangle, as I showed you this morning. As long as I work that circle in the triangle, like this, as long as I keep doing that circle and triangle, my chances of drinking are nil to none. I'm talking permanent sobriety forever. Say that in a meeting. Hi, my name is Doug. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I'm permanently sober. I will not drink ever again. Then get up and leave. Because the whole meeting is going to be about you.
Some people will take exception to that.
Oh, my God. So it says, our design for living, which is the 12 steps, is not a one-way street. It is as good for the wife as it is for the husband. When I first met my wife, she couldn't even look at me. She's Roman Italian. She went through a very abusive relationship. She married an idiot American. For you women, stay away from them. An idiot American man. And it was terrible. And all she wanted was to be able to design software, sit in a black room, and deal with nobody. And I gave her that wish. With the last company that we had, and we did very well with that. And then after that, she saw Alcoholics Anonymous, fell in love with all of you. And then she got into Al-Anon, and now she's the vice president of customer service. We have 6,100 employees. We have 17,000 clients. And all she does is talk on the phone. She has 5 windows in her office, and her room is yellow. So that's what these steps do. These steps just don't help us. It helps everybody. That is a true story on how I watched it change her life by just being associated with me. It says here, we feel a man is unthinking when he says sobriety is enough. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. You are so missing the boat. You are missing the boat if all you do is stay sober. I'm telling you that right now. If you put all three of these things into effect, recovery meaning the 12 steps, daily inventory, unity meaning meetings like this, service work meaning setting up big, beautiful conferences, your life will be unbelievable. Even last night, I filled out one of those forms. This form right here that I will go over tomorrow. This is on page 85 and 86. This keeps me clean. This really helps me in my life. So when I do four steps, they're like nothing because I do it every day. 99% of the time, I'd like to tell you every day. The last day, I was Friday. I was so jet-lagged, I went to bed without doing it. So, but it says here, some people cannot be reached. It tells you what to do when someone cannot be reached, okay? The situation that I'm going to tell you about in Tennessee, she wouldn't want me to reach her, and I was totally clear on that. But I'll tell you how I handled that situation, and I cleared it up. And that was the biggest, besides jail time in New Jersey, that was the biggest thing that I did, okay? But I also reap the benefits. I'm reaping the benefits of doing the steps exactly as outlined in this book, okay? And then it comes into the promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. I was amazed that I kept on getting on an airplane every week and flying out and making amends. Hi, it's Dougie. What do you want? Back in 1970, you know, slammed the door. Yeah. I flew all the way in from Florida. Please just listen to me, you know what I mean? So I was amazed before I was halfway through that I was still doing it. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We are not going to regret the past, nor are we going to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, there's a measurement, folks. There's a measurement. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, I went down pretty far near the end, and I'll explain what happened. Alcohol testing came in the airline. That was a huge curveball for me. Alcohol testing came in 1995, and I just remembered it was like February. I woke up and it was February. I missed all of January, and I'll tell you that story tonight too. But so my scale went down really, really low. So it says here, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will know how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. And then that will bring us to step 10, of which we will do. We have a question and answer going on here, but I want to talk to you just a little bit, and I want to challenge you just a skosh. I love the color of this money that I got. We're calling it Monopoly money. I don't even know how much it's worth, so I'm about ready to make a donation, and I'm not sure how much I'm making. And it may not be
money. They're Kronenborgs.
They're Kronenborgs, whatever you have, Kronen rubles. But the energy that we have is called money. It's called cash. I believe that the root of all good, money is the root of all good. If you work with others and help others, not just with money, but with time. For an example, I donate a lot of my funds. When I finished with my ninth step is when my whole financial life just went, changed. I would not buy anything new for me until all my financial restitutions was completed, because then I would be cheating you. So I was driving around in an 89 Buick, tail falling off, and I was making good money. But all that money was going to the universe. I was paying it back. Right? So this thing is great. And I'd like just to fly out next year and just to be with you all. But I would
Here's
like
your first question.
I would like to offer one of these, whatever that is, 100, it's like 20 cents, it's 100. I'd like to put, I don't know how much it is, but I'd like to put that in the basket. And now the basket is going around. And please donate all you can. But why'd you put, is that more than 20 cents? Someone told me it was 20 cents. Just keep going. I got a 500 one. Does anybody, that's 50 cents, right? All right. Everyone's like, I'm going to go play cards with that guy after. What about money? That's great. What about money? Can't seem to be getting out of debt after 3 years in the program, using too much of it. Well, you're talking to a man who owns a very large credit company. So let me tell you a little bit about money over in America. We are so far in debt, I still think we're renting out America from the English. I haven't figured that one out yet. Do you all have bad credit card debt here?
We're like $1 trillion.
Trillion. Do you all have credit cards here? Yeah. Credit cards, okay. This is what I want you to do. In prayer and meditation, this is what I do. Number one, if you ask me, whoever wrote this question, I want you to email me, and I will send you my Excel spreadsheet That's a money calculator. It'll show you exactly your expenses, exactly your income after taxes, and then what you need to do to make that right, and you need to stand by it.
Financial inventory. Yeah.
It's a financial inventory, a daily financial inventory, okay? I will give you that sheet for free. I will just email that to you, all right? The second thing I want you to do is start thinking differently. Let's think that we have unlimited amounts of energy, unlimited amounts of wealth in the world, and that you deserve it. Don't say, I want money, because the universe will give you the wanting. I've tested it. That's what happens. So believe in yourself. Keep your expenses down. I will show you through doing daily inventory. When I go into wrestling season with the high school that I'm a coach at, and I still wrestle in competition, I take a daily inventory of all my calorie intake, and I drop weight just like this. It's just a daily inventory. I do a daily inventory of my life. Do you know that you people plan vacations more than you plan your financial future? That's why my company is so large, because of lovely people like you, right? There's hundreds of millions of people out there that have no idea. I know to the penny of what I'm doing. Am I cheap? I don't know. I'm frugal, yes. But do I share a lot? A lot. I share a lot, which gives me more money back. So what do you do about money? Please email me. I will send you that. I want you to take a daily inventory of your, whoever wrote this, I want you to take a daily inventory starting right away. And I want you to start doing this. I want you to start paying, I really don't know how much your money is, but I want you to start paying the equivalent of $5 a month to all your debt that you harmed somebody else. I want you to start paying $5 a month. That's it. I'll tell you my story and how I started. It took me 7 years, but I paid a lot more than just five. I paid a lot. And then it all just came in, okay?
I've got a buddy, and Doug knows him, who came to me and started working with me in the mid-90s. And he was in trouble with a lot of different things, and he was certainly seriously alcoholic. He'd been in and around AA for almost 20 years and never been able to really stay sober. So they sent him my way. And we got to the ninth step, and he had 120 amends that he had to do, all right? Now, a lot of it was paying the money back, because he was a thief. He was a cheat and a thief. And he would just, he didn't care anything about your stuff. He would like borrow your car and drive it through the front window of the high school and then, you know, laugh about it. I mean, he was just a nut. Now, he came to me and I said, okay, we're going to start paying this money back. He's like, what? I'm like, make a list of all these people and we're going to start paying the money back. Now, his business was kind of, he was having a hard time with his business at this time. Now, he started to pay the money back. And he paid this one person back. It was he had stolen a lawnmower from a church, and he paid the money back. And he wrote a letter, and the priest of the church wanted the letter read to the congregation. It was really a nice little thing. And all of a sudden, his business got a shot in the arm. He landed a big deal. He made another amends. He landed another deal. He did another amends. When he was done with all of his amends, within about a year, his business was doing over $1 billion in sales. Every single year.
Multi-gazillionaire. And the money has nothing to do with it, because he just lost it.
Yeah,
just lost it.
Yeah.
He made all the newspapers. It was a bad situation. I called him up and said, how you doing? He goes, life is great. It doesn't matter. Billionaire. Just lost it all. Life is great. He's still just helping others.
And, you know, he's going to get back what he needs.
He knows it.
You know, he's going to get back what he needs. But the fact of the matter is there is a correlation between your willingness to make financial amends and your financial security and health. There really is. Doug has picked out a question for me. What if you were working with someone and it is obvious to you that they don't have the allergy? Do you try and take them through the steps or tell them that they are not a real alcoholic? You have to be very, very careful with this. What it says to do in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, if someone has an allergy, if someone's not sure about the allergy, is it tells you to tell them to step up to the bar stool and try a little controlled drinking. Now, again, I'm not telling anybody who's an alcoholic to go drink, but if you can't use your personal experience If your personal experience doesn't tell you that when you take one drink, there's a craving for another drink, and there's a craving for another, if your experience is if you go out to have two, you have two, if you go out to have seven, you have seven, if you decide not to get drunk, you don't get drunk once you start drinking, then you probably don't have the allergy, you're probably not an alcoholic. When I've worked through the steps, I've found three non-alcoholics after taking, I think, about over 100 people personally through the steps. When we take people through the steps in formats like this, I don't get close enough to them to really understand the first step. But one-on-one, I've taken well over 100 people through the steps. And there's been three of them. Two have been crack addicts, and one of them was just a nut looking for a place to land. And I've basically explained to them that they don't need to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, am I the Alcoholics Anonymous police? You're not an alcoholic. You're in the wrong. I'm not going to do that. But I will tell them that, look, you don't need to be here. It's hard enough to work this program when you know you need to work it to save your life, let alone to work it when you don't think you need to work it. Why don't you try some other places, some churches, or become a Buddhist, or a mummer, or whatever you think would help. And God bless you, because I'll tell you what, it's better to find out that you're not an alcoholic than to find out you're an alcoholic. Because I'll tell you what, when you find out you're an alcoholic, you have two choices. One is to live life along spiritual lines, and the other is to die an alcoholic death. There's no door number C.
It says here, if you can't find your higher power, what are you doing? Okay, so I come in here an atheist, and I'm going to tell you tonight at 8 o'clock, which will not be taped on my story. I'm just teasing, it will be taped. But I was an atheist, and so I'm going to make this promise to you. And this might be going out on the limb, but if you work the steps to your full ability, make every amends, become unbelievably free, I believe there is no way that you cannot find a higher power. I believe that with all my heart, because that's my experience. So what did I do? I worked these steps. I did this 9-step non-stop. I paid back every restitution and the hundreds of thousands of dollars while going through a divorce, getting my total ass kicked financially. But I always had a $20, a $50, a $500, a $1,000 a month, whatever it was. I always had something in the mail, always. Always, 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 every month, never missed. For 7 years, I paid off ungodly amounts of money, okay? When I actually did all this and I helped others to achieve sobriety and watch these people come in totally beat up and then just beam with love, then go to meetings, by doing that circle in the triangle, if you don't believe that there's a God, or if you don't believe that there's a higher power and you don't feel it on the inside, then there's something seriously wrong, maybe chemically, that you may need to go look at. But my experience is everyone that has truly... Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed the path. The person who has thoroughly followed the path, rarely have I not seen them get a spiritual awakening. I had one guy. I used to bet $1,000 in the beginning that if you did not get a spiritual awakening by the 12th step, I'd give you $1,000. One guy, Henry T., he was an attorney out of Charlottesville, Virginia. And Henry T. was an atheist just like me, bringing him through, doing the work, making the amends. Comes up to the 12th step. He still doesn't have it. I'm like, oh my God, I'm looking at my checkbook. How am I going to give him $1,000? So I get on a 4-day trip and I fly. Within the third day of that trip, I get a phone call. It's from Henry T. And the pain got so great, he dropped to his knees and got a humongous spiritual awakening because he went out and made his last amends, and it was to this company that he was a lawyer for and totally hosed them. And when he came back to the house, the whole life has changed. His whole life changed. He was one man I thought was not going to get it, and he got it. So the answer to your question is work the steps diligently, make total 100% amends, including financial amends and restitution, help others to achieve sobriety and spirituality, and you cannot not fail. You cannot not fail. You just can't. I haven't seen it happen yet.
Here's one. And it says, do you work the steps with sponsees that have mental disorders like manic depressives? And if you do, in what way? Now, the two things I want to make very, very clear, that Doug and I do not speak for Alcoholics Anonymous. We come off with a bit of an authority because we've got a lot of experience, and we might think that we speak for Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob from the grave. You know, we're channeling their knowledge. We might think that, but the fact of the matter is we really don't speak for Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. And I'll also state, when it gets into situations with medication, that we're not doctors either. So if someone is giving you specific advice and they're not a doctor, that may or may not be a really good thing. Now, here's my personal experience with it. Do I sponsor people that are manic depressives? I do. I have several that I am sponsoring. Do I sponsor people that are on medication? Yes, I do. I have several people that are on, more than several, that are on one type of medication or another. I sponsor an individual who's severely bipolar, and he's just doing a really, really great job. It says in the beginning, you know, there are those two that have grave emotional or mental disorders, but they too can get sober if they have the capacity to be honest. I believe that you can if you work a hard enough program. Now, on the flip side of this, I do want to state that if you're brand new and you walk through the doors of AA and your life has just gone down like the Hindenburg in a huge explosion, you've just screwed up everything in your life, and if you were put in front of a psychiatrist, you would have every single symptom of every single disorder there is. You would be depressed. You would have high anxiety. I'll tell you what, 100% of the alcoholics with less than 30 days have depression and anxiety, because you're supposed to. You've just trashed your life. You know what I mean? So you got to be very, very careful not to be misdiagnosed, because if you go to a professional and you say, I'm really depressed, you know, I've got this, I've got this, I've got this, and they don't understand that there's a situational element to all this, like you're supposed to be depressed when you completely ruin your life. They can say, oh, you're depressed. Here, you know, and you can get caught up in a medication cycle that you may or may not need. What I recommend is to, if you're going to get advice from a psychiatrist or a clinical psychologist, find one that has some experience in addictive illness. Because if they have experience in addictive illness, they'll be able to spot much easier whether it's situational or clinical. Right? You don't want to be misdiagnosed, because the fact of the matter is it can make it a little more difficult if you're on a lot of different kinds of medication to work a spiritual program of recovery. So I would just be very, very cautious in being misdiagnosed. Go to somebody who really knows. It says in this book that there are many good doctors out there, good professionals. We need to make use of what they have to offer. But it says good doctors. Okay, I would say that how I would describe a good doctor is somebody that understands the addictive illness that we have, whatever that might be. I'm really lucky in my area. I know a number of really good doctors, and many of us do need medication maintenance. We just do. You know, it's not unusual, and they're coming up with more and more types of medications that really do help a lot of the things that we have. So I wouldn't just say you're on medication, I'm not touching you. I don't do that.
No, and I don't do that either. And, you know, I was sitting at a table once, and doctors in America are giving out Prozac like Tic Tacs. And I was, me and one other person out of 10 were the only people not on Prozac. So I started researching it. And this is page 52. On page 52 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, they define a dry drunk, somebody who has not worked the steps and just stopped drinking. Okay? Check this out. If I walk into a doctor and I say this, doctor, I am having trouble with my personal relationships. I can't control my emotional nature. I'm a prey to misery and depression. I can't make a living. I had a feeling of uselessness. I am full of fear. I am unhappy. I can't seem to be of real help to other people. If he doesn't put me on Prozac, he's committing malpractice. That's just being a dry drunk. Work the steps, find God, help others. You won't have that anymore, okay? I believe 2/3 of the medication would go away. Having said that, I have truly met 3 people in my time that had chemical imbalances. I'm dealing with one now. She's an absolute wonderful, wonderful gem of a person. And I'm learning a lot about the manics. They were all had manic depression, and I hear it's just black, and it's really, really, really black. The first thing I've told these 3 people is, get the medication first until you get that under control, which takes months. Until you get that under control, everything else is kind of just like gray. Am I right? And they're like, yeah, I'm glad you understand. I'm like, well, it's just what I observed. I really don't understand. I can't tell you I understand how you feel. But get the medication first. Get that solid. Don't start tweaking it yourself. Don't just stop. Don't do that stuff, okay? Get the medication first. You got to see these people. When the medication clicks, it's like, oh my God, this light goes on. This clarity comes off. Then when I bring them through the steps, it's all over. They're like this huge God, one big God consciousness, not this pink cloud. You know, it's forever. I've been on a pink cloud for 13 years. You know what I mean? I just call it a God consciousness. So I'm a firm believer in that. It talks about it in the big book. You're dry drunk. You know, find spirituality. It says, what can a person do when he is hooked on sex websites? It's destroying my spirituality. That does destroy a lot of men. I haven't heard that many from women in their fifth step, but the guilt that comes from that, the absolute destruction of their in self, and I'm not judging whether it's good or bad or indifferent. I don't believe that there's this fulcrum point of this is good, this is bad. I believe it's all what it is in the spiritual world. It's just all what it is. I believe God has given us everything, and you know, and I truly mean that when I say he's given us everything and free will. You know, I don't believe in this free will, but then you got these 10 things that if you don't do this, you're going to hell. I mean, come on. My God just doesn't believe. I don't believe like that. That's just not my experience with my God. So if the sexual thing is really, really harming you, let's look at it. Go to the videotape, as they used to say. It's the big book, right? So it says here, it talks about in the big book about the sex. It says, to some extent, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work with them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperial urge when to yield would to mean heartache. And as you start doing that and helping others and watch people change, the whole sex dynamic thing will change. I don't know if you're new or not, but you'll watch it, because sometimes we take our addiction and we'll act out in other ways. There's another fellowship that's very good at that. And they show you how, you know, you'll get rid of the drugs, but it will act out in other ways. Same thing with alcoholism. You'll get rid of the alcoholism, but if you're truly not working the triangle in the spiritual part, you're going to act out in other ways. So by helping others, it talks about in the big book, that imperial urge of going on the web and looking at it, okay, feel uncomfortable for a while. Just feel it. Feel the uncomfortable. Don't judge yourself. Don't say, I'm just such a scumbag. Don't do that. Start helping others. Because what I say to these people that are on the 3 medications and they have the bipolars and stuff, you are here to help other bipolar people. Because there's many, many, many bipolar people that are hiding here in AA, afraid to talk about it. So get out there and talk to them. Say, get the medication, work the steps, help other bipolar people. That's why I believe you're on this earth. So that's how I would do it.
If you have hurt someone very much and done the 9th step on that person, but she won't forgive you and don't feel free until she does, what can I do? I feel that she has to forgive me. It's the mother of my child. You know, there's a couple of things in the big book that says we may get thrown out of the office. If we do, we've made our demonstration. It's water under the bridge. We get the freedom from the willingness to do the amends. Another part here that says there may be some wrongs that we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter, but we don't delay. Basically, you know, I had a situation with a boss, And I went to make direct amends, and he threw me out of the office. Then I went back again about 6 months to a year later, figuring he might have cooled off. He threw me out of the office again. Then finally, and listen, the last 2 years of my drinking, my active drinking, I worked for this guy. And I was an electrician and not a real good one at that point in time. And he wasn't real happy with me on a number of levels. Threatening to bring an automatic weapon into his office and shoot everybody, after I had quit was not a good move either. He was pretty upset with that. I don't remember much of that threat, but I was like that. I'd get drunk and call you up and threaten you. But irregardless, he wouldn't see me. And this one time I went up to get my hair cut, and I walked into the salon, and there he was over in the corner waiting to get his hair cut. So I moved over and I kind of like hemmed him in. He would have pretty much had to get up and knock me aside to get away from me. And, very respectfully, very courteously, I kind of went into my deal and told him, the last 2 years of my drinking were with you. And, I know I caused you a bunch of harm and I didn't give you a full day's work. And, and I did my deal and I got through it. And, at the end of that, he gets up and he goes, "Chris, you're a young man." I mean, that's what he says to me. My alcoholism made me look 10 years older than I actually was. And when I got sober, he hadn't seen me in a while. When I got sober, I actually looked younger. And he goes, he was like that. And I'll tell you what, later on, I kept moving forward with my job. He ended up becoming somebody that did work for me. I would hire him as a contractor in some of the places that I worked, and we're tight. And he's, if he's mad at me at all, it's because I don't stop by enough and say hi. And this is somebody that threw me out. Now, with sexual relationships, there's sometimes a lot of hurt. I know that there's some things that my ex-wife still does not forgive me for. I've made amends. I've tried to make right everything. All the old child support's been paid, and I'm actually still paying. My daughter is about 27 years old, but she's back living with her mother. That's what happens, by the way, in the United States. You go out and you have a family, and then you move back home with mom. happens all the time back there. And so I'm trying to help support her a little bit. So some money and some things are heading out to where she's staying, I haven't completely stopped trying to help, but my ex-wife is really an unrecovered codependent, unrecovered Al-Anon. She's never dealt with the things that she needed to deal with, and she's still very, very angry with the world. Now, I've done my part. I've done everything that I believe I can do. I can't keep going over there and begging for forgiveness. All right? That's not what we're supposed to do. This is about a demonstration. We're living a different life. We've made our demonstration. It's water under the bridge, and we need to continue to keep doing the right thing. I'll tell you what happened, though. I was not allowed to see my daughter after I'd gotten sober and I made my first. I wasn't allowed to see my daughter. They didn't trust me. Well, slowly the trust came back to the point where there was actually a time when my ex-wife called me up and said, would you take our daughter? And would she live with you? I think you can actually offer her a better life if she lives with you. So, I mean, it went 180 degrees to the other side, where I was tragically alcoholic and dangerous. I mean, I burned down houses by accident. I mean, I'd carry around handguns in a blackout. I mean, it was just really dangerous. And I went from there to quite possibly offering the best environment for my daughter to grow up in. And my ex-wife recognized that and said, okay, she's gonna go and live with you for a while if that's all right. Now, time can heal most wounds. Is there going to be a situation where someone is not going to forgive you? That's certainly possible. It's not probable, it's certainly possible. And I'll tell you what, it's water under the bridge. I mean, we need to learn to live with it. We can't say our sobriety is contingent on someone forgiving us. We just can't do that, because our sobriety is contingent on our relationship with God and how we help others.
You know, that same thing happened to me after 5 years. I've been a perfect ex-husband and father and to my two children. But after 5 years, for some reason, my ex-wife and I had a discussion. I said, "Don't you trust me?" She goes, "I don't trust you as far as I could throw you." 5 years. 5 years. And then that hurt. I'm like, "Don't you know who I think I am? I'm like this spiritual guru." And she goes, "I still don't trust you as far as I could throw you." And so what happened was, about another 5 years later, she still wants to play flight attendant, which is fine, but she's away from the children for about 24 days a month. And I said, "Listen, there's not going to be any more nannies. They're about ready to start high school, and there's no more nannies. So I'm going to move to where you are. I'm going to buy a house, and I'll take care of the kids for the next 4 years and bring them through high school." The first day that I was back, she had thrown out her back. So I was in her bedroom making sure she was okay. And she says, "You know, I just can't get over how much you change, and I'm so glad that you are here. Thank you for everything you have done for us." Now, that's 10 years. I'm pretty patient, I guess. I don't know. But you know what? It never bothered me what she thought. It never bothered me what she thought. That was her gig. Nothing. Yes, I destroyed her. There's no doubt about it. But I was always perfect on the money. I was always there when I said I was going to be there. I took care of the children. I took care of everything. I was there emotionally, physically, mentally. And so whatever she wanted to think, she wanted to think. And that's that. I think we have time for one more.
Well, is there another one here?
Do you have one? Do the steps with a sponsor. Here, this one. "As a sponsor, how do you make sure that the sponsee has surrendered and is willing to do the work? Invite him over your house. Hey, listen, I'm going to be at my house from 10 to 2. Come on, bring your big book, bring a highlighter and a pen."
When I start working with somebody, somebody will come up and say, "Hey, would you sponsor me?" I really try to follow the book. And in the book it says, on the first visit, leave this book with them and ask them to read it. So the first thing I'll ask you to do is read the big book. I won't say yes or no. I'll say, "Read the big book." They're like, "I've read the big book. What's this all about?" Well, the book says to leave the book with them. I don't care if you've been around 10 years. I want you to read the big book, and I'm going to ask you to highlight certain things. And then when I ask you, when the next time I see you after you've read this, when I ask you, "Are you willing to go to any lengths?" I'm going to make sure you know what any lengths looks like. I mean, has anybody ever come up to you and say, "Are you willing to go to any lengths?" And you don't know really what that means. And you say, "Yeah, well, maybe." I want them to know what any lengths is. And I ask them, "Are you willing to do what it says to do in this book to recover from alcoholism?" And if they say yes, then I'll start working with them. Now, every once in a while, I'll get somebody that's so sick they can't even read the book. And that's another thing. We're adaptable. I don't believe in the cookie cutter approach for sponsees. I listen to my, it says that we'll intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. I intuitively know how to handle newcomers that baffle me. Okay. I just do. I'll be helpful as long as there's a willingness and a participation in the recovery process. I'll tell you this, when you're putting in more work than they are, it's not working. You should not be in that relationship when you're putting in more work than they are. When you walk away exhausted when you've been working with somebody, it's not working. You should walk away elated. You should walk away going, "Wow, that's really great." When you walk away exhausted, it's usually because you're putting more, you're feeding too much, and there's nothing coming back. So it does say in this book that if someone is not willing to work with you, that you should drop them for a while. Maybe they'll change their mind. And I do that a lot, too. I don't fire anybody. I don't like shaming anybody or making you feel small. Alcohol does enough of that itself. But I'll just kind of disappear off to the side. And you'll kind of get the hint that I'm not willing to spend a lot of time with you, because I need to spend the time with, my time is finite these days. I need to spend it with the people that are really, really willing. Now I'm gonna leave you with this. I want you to consider something. Consider that a life with unfinished amends. In other words, the difference between a life with all of the amends that you're consciously aware of being taken care of and addressed versus the life where you still have unfinished amends that you know about is like the difference between night and day. Mm-hmm. It's like the difference between black and white. And for some of us real alcoholics, it can be the difference between life and death. So I want you to consider something. I'm not going to make you raise your hand, but I'm going to ask you this question. Are there unfinished amends in your life? Are there amends that you know you should do that you just haven't done? Then I want you to consider something. Is it possible that not making that amends can lead you back to a drink? I just want you to consider it. Don't give it a yes or no answer. Just ask if that's possible and consider that.
And I want you to consider this. At 8 o'clock, I'm going to tell you my story. So consider.
Don't miss this.
This basketball, hockey, soccer thing you got going on, whatever it is, as you can tell, I'm not very much into sports. If it's not wrestling, I'm not into it. Or would you rather come hear that crazy story that I got going on here, which
8 hours, bottle to throttle.
8 hours, wait till you hear this. It's great. Okay, so tonight we're going to come back here at 8 o'clock. It's going to be a speaker meeting, a normal speaker meeting. We're very excited about to have you all here. There's a lot of people that are coming. I'm real excited about that. Tomorrow morning's meditation, and then I'm going to bring you through steps 10, 11, and 12. That's the meat. That is the continued that you all are going to do. So we're going to email you these packages. I'd like you all to print them out tonight and bring them in. I'm going to show you how to do daily inventory. I'll even bring in mine, which it's going to be blank because life is phenomenal.
And one more thing. My wonderful wife, Mary Beth, is the warm-up speaker for Doug.
And so, big Al-Anon girl. So for the Al-Anon girls that are here.
She's Al-Anon. She's AA. She's lived with me for 13 years.
Check that out.
There's something to be said about that. And if you can do that successfully.
Forget about it.
Thanks, guys. Let's give them a hand. Hi, I'm Padley. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
So we should get speakers like this all the time. And you did all my announcing. No, that's great. So I want to thank you. As you noticed, we circulated the baskets while Doug was speaking. And I want to thank you for your contribution. I want to tell you that all your contributions go to holding the next convention. And we don't use any money on committee meetings or anything. We do this for fun and for free. So thank you for allowing us to stage these events. Chris told us about the surprise speaker.
Oh, sorry about that. I didn't know it was a surprise. So,
surprise! Surprise.
She'll still surprise you, even if you don't know who she is.
So I would encourage all of you to come tonight. Mm-hmm. The door's open. I don't even know if you're closing them. But we'll start mingling about 19:30. Then at 8 o'clock, there's a surprise speaker. Mary Beth is on.
Shh, don't tell anybody.
Oh, well.
And she's going to tell her story, and it's truly amazing story. And at 8 o'clock... 8 o'clock. Doug is going to tell us what the thing is. That thing he did in Knoxville, Tennessee.
We all need to know what the thing is.
Yeah, he hasn't told me. I'm as curious as you are. The heck with football? Who knows he needs football? I need to know what the thing is.
Call football.
Yeah. Isn't it soccer? It's football. It's football over here.
Talking Eno 2, comma Doug Pool. Yeah. Yeah. 9 o'clock. Doug is at 9 o'clock.
The surprise speaker's at 8, right?
Yeah, surprise speaker at 8.
The surprise speaker, Mary Beth, is at 8.
Oh. Yeah.
Can I say that out loud?
So, you want to close this session with the serenity prayer?
Yeah, man.
We do it in all the languages we can. So, thanks a lot.
to be followed by the surrender. God, I offer myself to you. Show me the things I can change.
Serenity.
Serenity.
We take the serenity. Serenity. Grant me the serenity.
God.
Grant me the serenity. To accept the things I cannot change. The courage to change the things I can. And the wisdom to know the difference.
Okay, Swedish. Before we go to Danish, are we missing any languages? No? In Danish then? Hvem er det, der holder os etro?